Welcome to this week's edition of What's the Story. This week I'm joined by Leanne Alul, who's the author of Grammar. And Grammar was indeed the 2014 Novels for Youth winner, which was awarded by the Book Council and Agencia Zaza. So how long have you been writing? Was Grammar actually your first novel?
Yes, it was my first novel. I started scribbling poems, the ones that you write when you are young and you want to express yourself and what you're feeling. I was about 13 years old, even younger, but you can't really call those poems. And then I moved on to write lyrics because I used to sing and I wanted material for my own songs. And then I tried kind of different genres. I experimented with short stories and then I kind of worked my way through writing longer and longer. And that was when the novel came in. And this is, yes, indeed, my first full length, so to say, novel.
And so when did you start it and how long did it actually take you to put down once you'd started writing it?
Okay, because Grandma taps into a subject that is really close to me. It took quite a bit of time to put pen to paper. I thought about it for a long time. At first, I was going to write it as a diary, but then we thought it was going to be a cliche. So it took quite a bit of time, the thinking process. But then one summer, I was correcting the students' exams and I was really, really, really fed up. And I thought, that's not really nice of me. And I thought, yes, I should write now to escape kind of
the, therapy for you.
Those papers. And it took like 3 months to write.
Okay.
But then obviously there was a whole editing process. So 3 months to write the first draft, of which I have been thinking a lot about. But then the editing process obviously took months longer.
So tell us a bit about the story for people who haven't actually read the book.
Okay. So at first glance, when you see Grandma, and that was the reaction even of young adults whom the book is targeted for, you might think it's about drugs. And it is also in some way about drugs, because food can be an addiction too. And
absolutely,
not eating can be an addiction too. So Grandma refers to a small portion, a small amount of weight. And the main theme, I think that I can refer to it as a theme-driven novel, is anorexia. So that is the main theme. But then obviously the characters interact with each other and there are other themes that are explored throughout the book.
And this is a teenage girl's struggle with anorexia or borderline anorexia?
That's it. That's it. With anorexia, with fully fleshed anorexia, okay. That drives her nearly to death. So, that's tough.
That is tough. But a very real situation facing all societies today, in fact.
Yes, yes. And I've been to schools during the past year and you see that it is real and it needs to be talked about. People want to talk about it and people do have experiences which they suppress sometimes. And when something like this comes up, they see that they're not on their own. So it's by no means a book that you read to express yourself and to come out and say that you have anorexia. I mean, it's not going to heal you in no way. But it makes you think, I think, deeper and deeper about the subject.
And is it a good book, do you think, for parents and guardians of teenagers to read as well? So perhaps they can identify and understand a bit more about what's going on?
I do think, yes. There were parents who read the book and told me that they now understand their teenagers even more. Something that I say to the young adults is that sometimes our guardians do the best they think they are doing and they are doing their best, but it's not always the best for us. If someone is suffering from anorexia, you can't really go up to them and say, just eat this. It's nothing. It's a slice of pizza and that's it. That won't do any good.
Could you just read us a short excerpt of the story? It is actually, it's going to be in Maltese, but then you'll explain to us what actually happens there. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a part nearly at the end of the book. Naqta minn madan u nerġa nibda. Indaħal l-inġdej bir-rutella, ċinturin u ħabel għalli jista' jkun. Fuqhom nagħmel kartuna biex ma jidher xejn. U fuqhom nitfa' l-imbarazz ieħor skont dan. Is-seba' ta' filgħodu. Il-ġiri għamilta fil-ħamsa. Brava. Dan ferħan se jtir wiċċu jikxfu anke ġismu. Insir naf li anke hu kien ħobb jieħu tazz-saħalib mill-belt. Nittama lillum jixrob bis-silma. Marriċ immiss mal-kalorji tiegħu. Indumu nistennew, tal-linja tiġu bil-kem ninduna li nkunu wasalna ċirkewa. Mbagħad għawdex. Morna ħafna postijiet sbieħ mar sal-forn ta' xwejn ir-ramla l-ħamra dwejra t-tieqa l-akwadotti ċittadella u postijiet li l-lanqas bisnaf. Imma dan jafhom kollha u diġà nsejġ qalli jisimhom. Ħadna gost induru u l-baħar bellaħni. Bil-bikini taħt il-libsa madni mhux tajba biex nom. Jekk tinżel tqubik jarawk hekk ħoxna. Il-ħsieb li ninżel fil-baħar ukoll qabad nidexa. Dan ferħan ġismu. Għandu x'jikxef u għandu raġun ukoll. Inħalli lilu jinżel u jinnoqgħod naqra. Niftaħ il-ktieb ta' Brenda Hillman, insib food. Inside a booth at McDonald's before your music class you go up and down in your seat like an arpeggio. Lil dan, iltqajt miegħu l-ewwel darba x'imkien hemm, il-McDonald's. Ħatibda blikel. You eat merrily. Biex tkun ferħana tikolx. Meqalek li sen ikol. The sight of food going into a woman's mouth made Byron sick. Anke lili. Food is a metaphor for existence. Mel-ħjar nisparixxi. I couldn't eat it. Ma tistax tiekol. Ma nistax nikol. Dan ma jistax jifem li taqra x'gost fih u jien ngħidu li ma nistax nifhem li tiekol x'gost fih. Insa. Ħin likel u jagħtini ġieħ fl-istonku niftakar li l-vapur dardarni. Niftakar li Mr. James għalli nikol porzjonijiet żgħar, sinjorina, kull titħin ara xejn ma waħaxxin. Għandu tuffieħa u green salad f'kuler żgħir u l dan ngħidlu li kif jgħaddili nikol lilhom. Tikolx. Dan imur jixtri fish and chips. Ja, x'jintnu. Jgħidli li qed ngħid hekk għax qatt ma doqthom. U jaqbadni qabtit ngħidlu li qed jgħid hekk għax għadu ma jafnix. Filgħaxija. U dan ikun irid jerġa' jiekol. Tivvintax. Irid pizza. Insa. U jmur jixtri pizza. Naraħ ġejlura bil-kaxxa tal-pizza u kaxxa chips u jgħidli li ċips għalija. Ħles minna. Wiċċu jixel għax irnexxielu jagħmilu sorpriża u xtrali xi ħaġa żgħira x'innaqar jgħidli. Ħanżira. Biżball, skużani. Dan, marriċ li taqali min jidi l-kaxxa u nagħmel straġi. Xi ħaġa fija qalt li biex inwaqqagħha u hekk għamilt. Sa dak il-ħin ma kontx għadni naf li kaxxa taċ-ċips tista' taqalek min jidek hekk lanqas. Dan ma jgħid xejn, għal ħafna ħin ma jitkellimx, naħseb weġġajtu. Mbagħad qabel inżilna morna f'bajja mwarba biex naraw ix-xemx niezla, intlaqna fuq ix-xugaman minn fostan ta' affarijiet li tal-lajt tal-inqas użajna lilhom. Dan neħares fajnejja u jgħidli nħobbok u nemnu, għax jafasni miegħu qafsa li ilu ma nħoss bħala snin. L-aħħar li jafsitni hekk kienet il-mana ħseb meta ġiet lura minn Brussell wara xi tliet xhur. Kelli forsi 10 snin u jdeha bil-kemm daru miegħi imma l-afsa tagħha xorta penetratni. Bla ma jaf dan kważi jweġġani, imma xtaqtu jibqa' jafas ħajkisser ix-xaħam, ħajafas il-laħam u forsi jkisser l-għadam jekk għandi. Isħana ħelwa, il-fewġa fietla li jaħraq tar-ramel li jleq tal-istilel kollox sabiħ, barra jien. U l-afsa tiegħi fuq ir-ramel u l-forma li nħalli taħti kif dan jirsaq lejja u jafas miegħi. Jinżel ħdejja bħal delt il li jibqa' miegħi kulxin nitqalleb. Isħana. Nibsa li dan jirsaq ribqis u xhur oħra nispiċċa b'xi żaqdaqsix. Tiffintax. Hemm xi ħaġa bejnietna ma ddoqlix. B'ċek ċika fis-snin li ngħidlu li qed inħoss ħafna sħana u li sar ħafna ħin u l-aħjar immorru lura għax jibdew jinkwetaw għalina. U jsiba stramba li għal darba qed nagħtika silma. U nsiba stramba li d-disa ta' flaxija fis-sajf huwa tard. Kollox kien perfett dakinhar. Ħlif jien.
So I picked up just a little of that. My Maltese isn't brilliant. But can you just give us a précis of that element, that part of the story there?
Okay, so at this point in time, Annalisa, who's the protagonist, she went to Gozo with her boyfriend. And she's narrating the bit where he wants to eat and she doesn't want to eat. He wants to go to swim and she doesn't feel fit enough. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously Anna all along the way, who's telling her what to do. She's telling her to drop the chips, the fries that her boyfriend has just bought her.
So she doesn't have to eat them.
Exactly.
So, okay.
Exactly. So we see this continuous struggle between her, somebody else, but then there's always Anna.
And Anna's her sort of subconscious? Or?
It's difficult to explain. I like to explain it as this voice when you have something, I don't know, a piece of cake, and for a minute or two you hesitate and you say, should I eat it or not? And you say, okay, I'll eat it, or no, it has so much calories that I won't eat it. It's that kind of voice, but it's always there.
Okay.
And so that's persistent throughout the book. And at this point in time in the book, it's getting even worse. In fact, the last line of this chapter of the piece that I have just read says, everything was perfect on the day except me.
So why did you actually write such what is such an important book in Maltese? And not disregarding Maltese, but it does somewhat limit the market. Is there opportunity to translate it into English and also target people that only read English in Malta or don't read Maltese, or and further afield internationally? This is obviously a subject that doesn't just hit Malta.
Mm-hmm. There are opportunities, I mean, to translate the book, and that would be really nice. That is always a plus for an author to have his work translated. I did write the book because it is a subject that was close to me. I was for some time that sensitive to food. So I wanted to write in Maltese because that's my mother tongue and I feel most confident writing in Maltese. I wanted to write for young adults because I think it is a really challenging age to write for. And if you manage to target young adults and adults, that's a plus.
Yes.
And about a subject that would challenge them and make them think further, not only about anorexia, but about all the things that eat us away.
No pun intended.
Not at all.
So what are you actually working on now? Because grammar's just flying off the shelves. So you don't need to worry about that one anymore. What's your next project?
Okay. So with regards to writing, I am finishing the first draft of another novel for youths. So that is another challenge I'm facing. But it's lovely to write for that age, like I said previously. When it comes to work, right now I'm working with Iniziamed and Valletta 2018. Mm-hmm. And there are mainly two projects that I'm coordinating. That's Poetry on Potato Bags and Poetry on Film. And right now, also, now that summer has started, we're gearing up for the Malta Mediterranean Literature Festival. So that will come yearly.
Is that going to take quite a bit of your writing time away from you? Do you have a methodology when you write?
I do have to manage and try to fit in the moment when I write. I try to write every day.
Wow.
That's my ideology. Mm-hmm. But that does not always come into practice. But I try to do that as much as possible.
So on the same subject, you're writing one story or something and you go back to it every day, or you just write a something down to express a something?
No, I usually have one main project.
Okay.
So right now it's the novel for youth as well. But then I do experiment with some other story, and then there's a poem. But trying to focus. Normally I focus on one main project when it comes to writing.
And do you have a time of day when you write best? First thing in the morning, lunchtime? When you're not hungry.
Okay. normally, I do want a long-ish span of time. So if I have, for instance, half an hour at hand, I would find that difficult. So I do have to plan in order to have like at least 2 hours for me to read the bits that I've written before and to focus. Uh-huh. So, but when it comes to a particular time of the day, no. I really don't have a particular
time. You're a bit of a 24-hour person anyway, I believe.
Yes, yes, I am. Yes.
I hope the next story isn't about no sleep.
No, I don't want to give any more bad examples.
Well, no, they're honest examples and they're touching, which is why the book is doing so well. Was it actually easy to get yourself away from grammar to start the new subject? Because that was, not only a very personal story, but something that you've really, you know, must have changed your life, the writing, the publishing, winning the award, doing talks all the time. Your sort of Leanne Alul grammar. Now,
yes,
to sort of pull yourself away. How is that going?
It's not easy. So I don't want to be reduced kind of to just one book, but I do love grammar, obviously, because it's my first novel, so it's really dear to me. How this book came about, I was speaking to a young adult and I told her, do you think grammar will be too harsh for young adults? And she told me, no, we do speak and about these subjects and we do pass through these experiences. Mm-hmm. And one thing she mentioned in particular really left an impact, and I thought that I should explore this okay. subject. Uh-huh. This time, it's not a team-driven novel as much as Grandma is. I'm trying to focus more on the plot and on the characters. Uh-huh. So
do you have all your, do you know your characters already, or are you meeting them as you go along? Do you have your plot, is that already set? Do you know what's going to happen at the end? You're just desperate to get there. How do you work? How do you put your words into the structure?
That's an interesting question. Normally, I do put a lot of time into reading and planning. Mm-hmm. And then I normally plot all the story. So then it's a question of filling in. It's not that easy, but at least I know where I'm going, the direction that I'm heading to. When it comes to the ending, I do have an idea, but sometimes I do let the story unfold by itself, and the characters start to speak to me then.
So do you have conversations with them as you're going along? Do you sometimes think what they're doing? And
Yes.
They've gone a bit quiet. Where have they popped off to?
And yes. And I go up to my mum and I say, I don't know, Annalisa told me that. Annalisa who?
Yes.
Yeah, she.
And when it comes to plot development, how do you actually do that? How would you, if you were teaching someone, if you were, you know, in a workshop and somebody asked you how to do plot development, how do you do your plot development? How do you physically write down one word? Is it a mini story in itself?
To explain the plot, I love to use numbers. So the story is 1, 2, 3, 4. The plot is 3, 4, 2, 1. And that usually, in a simple way, does explain the way the plot works in simple terms. But then it's easy to say it, and it's not so easy to put it down. So I had a jigsaw puzzle, so to say. So I do shift like bits and pieces around and see where they fit best.
Uh-huh. And is that like a visual tool that you have in your office, or do you just remember everything, or you go back to the words and you cut and paste, or do you have like images of what your characters look like?
I do have images in my head, but I don't know how to draw even a flower. So I won't attempt to draw anything. But I do try to draw with words. And I do scribble. But I do use my laptop. I don't normally write with a pen. I do scribble down as I go along. But I do need my laptop and I sit in front of it and I write.
So you're focused. You're not in the car and something comes to you.
That as well. And okay. I take out my mobile. I shouldn't say this on radio, though.
And just record yourself or something.
Yes. Okay.
So what sort of tips would you give to budding authors now to start, but then when to know that you actually really have something to take to a publisher? When do you get to that point? Or how do you start? And how do you know you've got something at the end of it?
Mm-hmm. Right now, there are a whole lot of initiatives, really good initiatives, like Ziguzaik and Tahziz, all these workshops that can give an idea of what writing entails and the process of writing. So a thing that I would suggest is for young writers to familiarize themselves with the whole process. I used to have students of mine who used to tell me, but I wrote the story and it's mine and it's nice and I don't want to change anything about it. But obviously there's a whole process of editing and you have to be humble enough to know that other people know better. Yeah. And they do wish the best for your writing. And obviously I would suggest for them to read a lot and to write a lot. So not writing won't get anything written. So you have to write, to actually write. And then maybe only two words of what one have written makes sense, but at least
you've got something.
So
you say that you write every day. Is that something that people should do, whether it's write a sentence, develop a character?
Yeah, at least. I mean, I try to do it as much as possible every day. It does help because it keeps the juices flowing and it keeps you focused. And once you've left kind of projects, it's difficult to go back to it. It becomes harder as time goes by.
So, Leanne, you were telling us that you've been writing really since you were about 13 years old on, you know, scraps of paper, bits of poetry and songs. Have you kept all of that material as well?
Some of it, but I don't like to look at it. It's horrible.
Because it was sad or just at the time of your life or just that it was badly written because you were, you know, inexperienced at that time?
I thought I was Dante or Shakespeare, but I wasn't, obviously. Yeah. I do laugh at the stuff I used to write.
But sometimes maybe it has a sort of a pointer for a character or something. So I think everything you write is actually worth hanging on to just in case.
Yes.
Just in case. Can you tell us a bit more about something else you're writing? I know you have lots of projects up in the air at the moment as well.
I do have bits and pieces kind of poetry in different anthologies. A short story that was chosen last year, I think, or the year before, was for a project called Europa Flash 28, and it focused on flash fiction. So I do have a story there, which is translated to English, in fact, and to Chinese, because it was a European Chinese platform, yes. So that is something quite dear to me, in fact.
Have you got that you can read to us now?
Yes,
yes,
I can read the English version. I wrote this in Maltese and Dr. Albert Gatt translated it to English.
And Chinese?
I really don't know.
Who did that one?
I don't know.
Okay.
So
what's it called?
It's called Basha. Okay, so it goes like this. Doris and Pasha had moved in together right away because they'd fallen madly in love. And Pasha's a nutter, no doubt about it. Basha in Maltese, which suits him perfectly. Nothing's perfect in this world. Doris yells across their rat hole of a flat in Xero. She thinks nobody can hear her. It's the same with her when she's talking on her mobile phone or on the phone. She makes herself heard all the way up and down a street full of women, of whom Doris is one. But she's not exactly like them, even though on the outside she's like any of them, big bare breasts, slight pot belly, skinny legs. Still, she's the best of the lot. She'd never wanted to walk the streets of Xira like the others, whom she thinks of as happy to just muddle through. She thinks of herself as a porn star. Her mother used to call her Doris Star, and now it looks as if Doris has grown up to fulfill her mother's dreams in every inverted way imaginable. She's always touching the stars, is Doris. If it's not alcohol, it's sex. And if it's not sex, it's drugs. Doris isn't one to happily muddle through, mind you. She's found Basha, a giant of a man with a from here to his mother Russia. Every evening when Basha thinks she's spaced for long enough, he goes down to get her at the end of Testaferrata Street. If he finds her there, he grins because it means he gets to have a go himself. If not, he grins because it means he'll have enough money for alcohol, drugs and cigarettes. Enough is enough, she's heard yelling again. She forgets every time that a rat hole is all she's got. All she remembers is how she wanted a Japanese car, a villa in Madlena and a spanking big yacht in the Mena. And it pisses her off to remember that the only spanking big she's pulled off is her debt and the sadness that envelops her. Doris isn't completely dissatisfied with her job. If only she could choose when to walk the streets, it wouldn't matter so much. Doris is mostly dissatisfied with Basha, who doesn't lift a finger, just shuffles around the rat hole while she goes down to earn a living for the whole lot of them, for Basha, for Vladimir, Basha's brother, and for Andrei, whom she agreed to call that because it sounded Maltese enough to her, and it's not too hard to pronounce. For the rest, Doris is all over the place. She got pregnant as soon as she found work and was landed with Vladimir as well. Because she'd loved Basha right from the start and had never uttered a single no, not even to Vladimir. He'd threatened to kill her son if she drove him out, and from that day onwards, he'd made the rat hole his home and turned the place into a dump. "You and your entire race," she yells, loud enough so that every woman can hear her. "I'm off." The Basha thinks he can understand Maltese and he lets her go, shopping. As soon as she said her piece, she grabs Dre, even Andre's heart sometimes, slams him into the pushchair that used to be hers when she was a kid and leaves. She got that pushchair when she dropped in to bid a last goodbye to her widowed mother, and in order not to worry her, she said she wanted to give it away to charity. That day, she also told her she was working for a telephone company and they'd offered to put her in the same village since she couldn't drive. Her mother, who never asked questions, was fine with that. In a quarter of an hour, Doris reaches Emcida, stops in front of the Mela Verde, spots her mother in a corner washing the floor, and makes a beeline for her. Doris tells her she'll explain everything and her mother understands without any explanation. It's been 7 days now, and people's tongues haven't stopped wagging. Doris, her mother and Ray now live in a town that isn't Gzira and isn't an island. And apparently Vladimir drank so much he got a massive case of the hiccups that killed him, and Basha got so mad his curses made the rat hole collapse and he was buried alive.
That's nice ending. So doing the research for something like that must be quite interesting.
There's this photographer, Irina Popova, who documented this Russian, I think, family who lived in squalor and in a really bad situation. And I had this image in my mind. And this project focused on something that was Maltese. I was always fascinated with Testaferrata Street. I mean, the way these women are treated and what they think and what they don't think and how they act. And in some way or another, in a few words, I tried... To put these two images together.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's amazing that actually you can be inspired by something like a series of photographs.
Mm-hmm. It does help a lot.
And marry it in with that. So I'd really, really like to thank you, Leanne, for coming in to speak to us today. So that's Leanne Alul, the author of Grammar and much, much more. I'm sure we'll be hearing from her over the coming months, weeks, and years.
Thank you.